Yeah. So first of all, let me thank the organizer and in particular Anna for this very kind invitation. It's a terrific opportunity for me to be here and present my work. So the problem I'm going to present today is whether if we are able or not to predict the global spread of epidemic of infectious diseases. And by global, I mean large scale, so worldwide scale. So definitely predicting the future is one of the perpetual dreams of mankind, but probably we forget about the fact that nowadays we see an application of this, so building a scientific model in order to understand and probably predict future patterns or next future patterns, and we have something like that in our everyday life. If we look, for example, at weather forecasts, so what was seemed to be impossible a few years ago is actually something that we get on the news every single day. And by getting very detailed experimental data on surface and gas and air masses, we're able to build mathematical and very sophisticated mathematical and computational models in order to predict the next future weather. And this is an image that I downloaded yesterday of this area in Toronto, and indeed, as you can see, the weather is pretty nice. So my question is, are we going to be able right now or soon in the next future to do the same for the forecast of epidemic of infectious diseases? So the of course, it's needless to say that this is a very, very hot topic. If you're able to understand, on the right side here we have an image of the spread of SARS disease in the world with a color code that shows the temporal pattern starting in China in November 2002, then reaching a few other countries in Southeast Asia and then jumping to North America and continental Europe. So if you're able to, let's say that tomorrow there is another outbreak, if we're able to predict what is going to be the geotemporal pattern of that outbreak in the world, of course we can provide some measures to contain that, or at least work on some intervention measures. A little bit like if we know that tomorrow is gonna snow, we're gonna prepare to everybody's gonna be prepared to go out and be careful on the roads and to clean the roads, or maybe spread some salt on the roads as well. So why we're not able to do that at this point? The idea is that on one side we have fluid and gas masses, which follows physical laws, that is much easier to describe and to model than human behavior. Whenever humans are involved, it's always a very hard problem. In addition, we have to take into account interaction between people, because of course that's the way an infectious disease spreads from a person to another. And on top of that, we also have to understand to measure, try to model or simulate how people would move. So right now everybody is in this room. If there is an infection going on, then all of us will, not all of us, but very likely some of us, would probably bring that at home, their workplaces, and so we could start different outbreaks in different countries. So in order to address this problem, what I would like to introduce and of course to motivate is a computational model for a discrete dynamics on complex networks. Now, why do we need complex networks? Well, actually, I'm not focusing on classical cellular automaton, and the problem is that, as you can see here, this is still the same map as before, and the fact is that long-range connections, so long-range interaction in my system, are fundamental. It's true that at the beginning of the SARS spread there was a sort of diffusion-like behavior in which only nearest neighbors were involved, but then immediately after the infection jumped to another continent. So I have to take into account that, I have to take into account long-range interaction, and I also have to take into account heterogeneity, which we will see later is really fundamental. So the model I'm gonna present is based on air travel. From the picture before, and experts realized that the air travel was the major ingredient for the large-scale outbreak of SARS, so the one that was responsible to bring the virus from one place to the other place of the globe, and In a short time, because for now we can fly from one part to the other of the world in a relatively short time, within a day. So I'm going to use this model that is a multi-scale. So I have two scales, the one in which I consider airports, and then the cities which are surrounding the airports, and all the people living in those cities. And then the people are also allowed to travel and get a flight and move from one place to another, as we did, for example, to come here. This model was introduced at the beginning in the late 60s by some Russian scientists who were trying to understand what would be the effect of some bioterrorism attack in some Russian cities. And by that time, even air travel was not involved, but they had a very precise data on who was moving from one city to another in Russia, because that was the time in which you needed a visa to go from to leave a city and to enter another one. Right now, of course, we are advantaged by the fact that all this data is digital, and so we can collect it and use it for the model. So the model includes the complete International Air Transport Association database that is made up of 3,100 airports in 220 countries in the world, and it accounts for more than 99% of the commercial traffic. I'm just talking about commercial traffic. And of course, it's made also of 20,000 connections. So I have again, the resulting network is composed by nodes. Each node is an airport which corresponds to a city where people are living. And then I have a link which connects two different airports if there is at least a direct flight between the two. Connection. In addition, on top of that, the database contains also information on how many people are actually traveling on that connection. So I came here from Indianapolis, and in my database I would have exactly the number of people who are traveling on that route. Now let's have a look at the properties of this network before going on, and this is what I mean with the heterogeneity that I was talking about before. So these are probability distribution, which analyze the main properties of a network. So we have a network of connection. First thing we can see is if there is an average number of connection, a typical scale for the number of connections of each airport. And there's not such a typical scale, because this is the probability distribution of the number of connections of each airport, and it's telling us it's in log-log scale. All of these plots are in log-log scale. This is telling us that there are a lot of airports which have a very small number of connections, the order of 10, some of them are just one. But then we have a finite number of airports with a huge number of connections. Let's take into account, for example, Frankfurt, 318 connections. So it's definitely not exponential, it's a long tail distribution, and this is telling us that there are huge variations, huge fluctuations in the number of connections that an airport can have. The same is for what concerns the number of people who are traveling on a connection. So if I get Indianapolis, Toronto, I would get a certain number of people on a daily basis traveling at that connection. A much bigger one would be, for example, New York, London, just to mention one. So the idea, again, is that we would like to understand, and here I have the distribution of the number of people living inside each city. So the database, the airline database, is that, and then complemented by census data of telling us how many people are living in each urban area surrounding each airport, and that is our is the place where people actually live. Now, why am I interested into that and I'm stressing these properties? The idea is that I would like to understand how these properties are then responsible, if they are, of the emerging pattern that I observe at the spatial and temporal level on the worldwide scale. So let's go down and break down the model at the two different scales. First of all, the city scale. So inside each city, I have a certain population of individuals. Here, each of these represent a city, and I have arrows, meaning that there is a connection, a flight going from one city to another, so that people can move along these arrows. Individuals are represented with these little circles, and each color corresponds to a stage of a disease. Now, inside each city, I'm simulating the transmission of the disease. So basically people, I start the simulation with some people who are infected, and then these people can transmit the disease inside the city where they live. A very basic approach to model infection spread among humans is through this so-called compartmentalization, in which people are just labeled by this according to the stage of the infection at which they are at a certain point. So they could, a patient could be susceptible to the disease, meaning that he hasn't contracted the virus yet, and or it can be at a later stage infectious if he contracts the virus and at the same time is able to spread the virus, to spread the infection, or recovered. Let's think about a disease like influenza, in which we go through an infectious period, and then at a certain point we recover, so we do not have symptoms anymore, and we are not able to transmit the disease. So this is a basic model. Now, I'm not going to go into the details, but the model can be described through probabilistic discrete equations. And I'll show you later on also why the discrete aspect is so important in this case. Basically, what we have to consider is that is the possible interaction between a susceptible and an infectious person. So the probability that a person got into contact, susceptible person got into contact with an infectious person, is provided by how many in a mean field approximation, how many infectious people have in that population. So simply I over the total population N. Then, given the contact, there is still the event of the infection needs to occur, and that event occurs with a certain probability beta that represents the force of infection of the disease, let's say. Then, implementing this inside within a computer, one is able to model this evolution in time. Let's say that we have a population which is not infected. I inoculated virus in the population. At a certain point, I have a rise in the number of infectious people because the disease is spreading among the population. I reach a peak, and then after the peak, the infection, the number of infectious individuals in time decreases, and this is due to the fact that the available pool of susceptible individuals who are able to contract the virus is getting smaller and smaller. Now, this is for what concern inside the model inside each of the cities. So inside each of the cities, I have something like this. And then all these models are coupled by the air travel that I was talking about before. And how does that happen? So I have the data on the number of passengers flying from Indianapolis to Toronto, for example. And based on that, I define some probabilities for each individual living in Indianapolis to travel from Indianapolis to Toronto. Those probabilities are simply given by the actual number of passengers going on that flight over the population of the origin city. The model is stochastic, but also in this case it needs to be discrete, and then we'll show you in the next slide why is that. The number of travelers, which is here indicated by the stochastic variable, is extracted from a multinomial distribution, written here, which is fitted with these probabilities. So if I'm living in Indianapolis, I have several choices. So I can fly and get a flight to Toronto, I can either get a flight to New York City, or I can fly to Atlanta, and so on and so forth. Each of these events have probabilities defined in this way, depending on the number of passengers going in that direction. And so I extract the number of travelers in a certain compartment, so susceptible, infectious, or recovered, going from Indianapolis to Toronto, for example, based on this multinomial distribution. If I have just one connection, that would simply be a binomial distribution, so either I stay in the city or I get a flight and I leave. Now, if I sum up on all the neighboring cities, of course I have a total flux of people leaving the origin cities, and then I have the total flux of people coming in the city. So, for example, if I take Indianapolis as a target city, this would represent all the people coming from different coming from leaving from Indianapolis and going to neighboring city L, so I'm summing on L, and this would be exactly the opposite. Now, when I put together these two scales, I have infectious diseases inside the city, and then coupling given by the travel, I have a worldwide scale model for the simulation of infectious diseases. Now, before going into the detail, I would like to stress why I need discreteness in this model. Well, the reason why is that at the beginning of an outbreak, I expect to have very few infected people. So I expect that the average value of the number of travelers is that is given by dose probability I defined before times the number of infectious individuals that I have in the city. I expect this to be very small. Let's assume we have something like 10 infectious individuals in Toronto, and I don't exactly know the population of the city, but I assume that it's some millions. So that here I would have 10 to minus 5, for example. So I have a number that is much more than 1. If I assume that these people could travel, what I would expect is that with the travel, a fraction, so nano individuals, would leave Toronto to go to different cities. And then when I update the infection dynamics inside each of the cities that I'm considering, the nano individuals would stay in Toronto would lead to an outbreak, and also the ones who infected a new city. So the idea is that we have instead to take into account the possible events by considering the discreteness of people. So a person who's living here either can leave and go to a neighboring city, get a flight, or stay in the city. But you can see that after I update the dynamics in both of the previous scenarios, anyway, I would have something that is totally different from what I would obtain here. So here, no matter what, at the first time step, every neighbor city of a city that is already infected would be infected. Well, instead, in this case, this city here and this city here are not infected yet. So since we are trying to model a real case and so apply this model to real case scenarios, the importance of these time scales, of these events, is fundamental. So we don't want anything like this to happen, because otherwise we would have a very biased picture of the timing. Now, once we have built this model, we can simulate at the computer, for example, the spread of a disease. Here there are some maps of simulated scenarios of pandemic flu in case we are not able to contain it among birds. And, well, there are many different things that one can do. In general, we can measure the number of infectious people at a certain location and how that changes in time. Then we can represent that also with maps in which a color code is corresponding to the level of infectiousness that I observe in that region. But now that I have these predictions, how much can I trust these predictions? So can I really go to some policymaker and tell them, look, this is what is going to happen if there is a pandemic flu going on? Are these predictions reliable? And if they are, how much they are reliable? So since the model is stochastic, let's assume that I run one simulation, and this is an illustrative example of what I would obtain from the simulations. Now, if I run again the same simulation with the same initial conditions, same disease, of course, but subject to a different stochastic noise, what would I observe? Something totally different or something more or less similar to that? And if it is similar, how much similar? So the idea would be to compare couples of realization and try to define a quantitative measure of how much two realizations obtained from the same initial conditions but with different stochastic noise are similar. So what we do is to introduce an overlap function which simply compares the value of the probability that an infectious individual is in a certain city at a certain time t. And I would like that, of course, to be similar in the two realizations in the whole time range that I'm exploring. basically this quantity is telling it's bounded between 0 and 1, and it's saying that if it is equal to 0, there are no common infectious individuals in any common city. So it could be that in one realization I have one infected city in Toronto and nothing else anywhere else, and in a second realization at the same time step I have one infected city in Rome and nothing else anywhere else. So that would lead to overlap equal to 0. An overlap is equal to 1 if I have exactly the same number of infectious individuals in each city, exactly in the same city, at the same time. So simply, if the two realizations are identical. That, of course, is my starting point. Since I have the same initial conditions, I start from an overlap value equal to 1. If the two realizations are and of course a value between 0 and 1 is giving us the degree of similarity of two realizations. So I perform this several times on the networks before several couples of realizations, and then I want to see what happens. Now that I see what happens, what would I compare that with? So the idea is that I would like to go back to those aspects of the heterogeneity I was talking about before and trying to understand which of them is responsible for the pattern that I observe. So it's like I'm using the same model, but I'm kind of reshuffling the airport network. So I'm trying to understand what is the role of the airport network in the spread of SARS that I observed. If SARS comes out tomorrow again in China, would I observe something very similar, or instead would Africa and South America would be infected and all the rest of the world would not? So in that case, I'm changing, because I want to create some new models, so I'm changing the underlying transportation network. And in one case, I'm comparing it with a new model that is completely homogeneous, meaning that there is no complexity anywhere. Every airport has more the same number of connections, that is 10. I don't have that large variation between 1 and 300 as I had before. And all connections have exactly the same number of passengers. And even in that case, I don't have the large fluctuations I had before of 7 orders of magnitude. Then I compared with the second null model, in which instead I keep exactly the same topology of the real network here, the worldwide air transportation network. I keep exactly the same topology. What I instead am changing is the number of passengers who are flying on the connection. And instead of having those large fluctuations in those numbers, I'm just assuming that the people who are traveling from Indianapolis to Toronto is exactly the same number of people who are traveling from New York City to London. And then I have a look at the results. So this is the profile of the overlap function that I defined before, on top for the homogeneous network in which I don't have any complexity, in the middle for the network which keeps the topology but destroys the fluctuations in the number of passengers, and then the last one, the real one. So what we're interested in is just the beginning, the first phase, because it's the one that is more prone to statistical fluctuations and moreover is the one in which every intervention measure needed to be developed and implemented. So we need to understand if at the beginning of the outbreak the disease is predictable or not. So if I go to the homogeneous network, that's something that is quite high. So the realizations, the stochastic realizations are quite predictable. Then I have a huge drop if instead I plug in the true topology of the airline transportation network. And then instead I have again something that goes up around 80% in case I consider the real transportation network. Now what's happening? The idea is that in this passage, what I'm just changing is the number of connections of each airport. So if I arrive to an airport, for example, from Indianapolis, I go to Atlanta, that is a big hub in the United States, is the one with the largest traffic, and I have a huge number of possible connections. So in one realization, it might be that I step, that I get on a flight to go to Toronto. In a second realization, I get a flight and I fly to Europe. In a third realization, I get a flight and I go somewhere else. So the number of available paths that the virus could follow is very large. And this decreases a lot this predictability. While instead, if I consider also the heterogeneity that I have in the weight, so the actual number of people, well, in that case, when I got also to a larger hub with a lot of connections, anyway, the probability of following certain paths would be higher. because there's much more traffic going on there. So if I arrive in Atlanta, actually, my probability of getting a flight or flying to Europe would be much higher than from Indianapolis, just to make an example. So the degree, the topology, the complexity of the topology of the transportation network is strongly decreasing in my ability to predict where the disease will go. But then this is increased again by the fact that I have a number of passengers which varies on seven orders of magnitude. And now, I would like to apply this this concept. So the final message that one gets from this picture is that if this is so high, that means that more or less I can, in a certain way, under certain condition, try to follow this virus, try to predict where this virus will go, in sort of something like epidemic pathways. And so I would like to understand if that is possible in a case study. And I would, and I'm picking SARS as the example. Now, instead of the SIR, simple SIR model that I had before, I had something that is much more complicated because for SARS, one has to take into account some specific stages of the disease, like incubation period, hospitalization, and so on and so forth. So this is the complications which get into the city. Now, if I modify the model accordingly and then start the simulations with the available knowledge of the initial conditions, I can do this, let's say, 1,000 times, obtain 1,000 different realizations, and I can define a probability of outbreak for each country. So simply define how many times the country has received the infection. And so I can provide a color-coded map like this one, which going from gray, when the probability of receiving, of being infected by this disease is very low, if not zero, through yellow and until red, where the probability of getting the disease is very, very high. And this already identifies which are the hot spots that I should take care of, that I should consider in planning my strategies. Now, if I break down this analysis at the level of the single city, and here I have a snapshot of what happens in Canada, all these little dots represent different airports. Each of them is surrounded by a city where people are living and which could in principle be infected by SARS. And instead what I find is that the two largest places, the two places with largest probability of outbreak are Vancouver and Toronto, and then I have also something else in Calgary and in Edmonton. And Vancouver and Toronto were the only two places during SARS outbreak which were infected. So among all these possible little airports which could receive the infection and could work, the outbreak could start, I'm actually, the model is actually able to pick up just a few of them. Among those, the ones in agreement with real data. If I go back to the map of the outbreak likelihood, then I can can define some countries at risk as those which have a probability outbreak above a certain threshold. And once I do that, I can then compare with the empirical data. So I download, I check on the WHO website, and I have a look at really if the countries that I'm predicted as infected are the ones which were infected by SARS. And here are the ones. So whatever you find, you see in red is in agreement with empirical data. It's bold red if the country for a correct prediction of outbreak, is striped red for a correct prediction of absence of outbreak. And then whatever is left is in green, which represents both false positive and false negatives of our simulation results. The idea is that out of the 28 countries infected by SARS at the end of the outbreak, we are able to get 23. And the mistakes that we do, the false negatives and false positives, amount to a total of 15 out of 220 countries, which is an error of 7%. So the disease seems, the simulation seems really to reproduce well the disease. And if one goes, I'm just going very briefly on this one. Of course, given these predictions, one can also have a look at the quantitative predictions. So I get the countries. Now I'd like to understand, is the number of predicted cases comparable or not with the observed scenario? And here are all the countries which were infected with SARS. On the top panel you see the countries in which the empirical data lie within the fluctuations of the simulation results, while instead here in the bottom we have the outliers. Now, take into account that even when it seems that it's far, predictions are far from the empirical data, these are just a few hundreds of people over a total population of a country, which is usually of the order of millions. And what is the reason? How much do I have? Before, yesterday I should have finished. I'm just keeping on the overlap and very quickly saying that it's indeed very high. That's the reason why we are able to get good predictions in agreement with the empirical results. And now this is the last one that I'm going to put, that is what I was telling before. So if the disease is predictable, that means that I can more or less try to follow for the path of a virus. And I can define for each of the country what is the origin of the infection. So if I know that for Canada the origin of infection is for example Hong Kong, then I would probably focus my the travel restrictions, travel screening at the airports, and possible intervention measures into that direction. Of course, these are only a risk assessment scenario analysis, so it just provides probabilistic views of what could happen, but still could be an important tool when trying to develop intervention strategies in a possible future outbreak of infectious disease. I would just like to thank my collaborators, Alain Barrat, Marc Barthélemy, and Alessandro Vespignani, spread between the U.S. And Europe, and I'm just leaving this as the background for the context. And I'd like to thank you and be glad to get your answers.